Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Conscious Conversations with me, Marlin Anderson. This is where I'll be guiding you on your own healing journey and talking you through my experiences with spirituality, grief, postnatal, prenatal depression, domestic abuse, eating disorders, and how I've got to be the person I am today. And I'm going to get you exactly to where you need to be. You can catch this podcast every Sunday at 6 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Hello and welcome to my latest episode of Conscious Conversations with me, Marlin Anderson, your host. Now today I have an extremely special guest and his name is Oliver Mason. Now how I met Ollie was under really sad circumstances actually. I actually met him in rehab and he was one of the tutors there. So Ollie, thank you so much for coming on. I'm excited for this conversation because a lot of people are going to learn from not just my history, but your battle and your own journey with alcohol and addiction, you know? And I know a lot of my followers are battling this journey themselves. And to be honest, I think one of the hardest things that I've had to overcome out of all the traumas that I've gone through is most probably addiction. I'm not gonna lie to you. So let's get stuck into this. What is your journey? Where did you start with all of this?
Oh, amazing. Well, listen, first of all, thank you for having me on. So my name's Oliver Mason. I also work as an actor and a recovery coach. That's how I met you in rehab. I also run a theatre school and I do voiceovers. But out of all the work that I do, by far the most important to me is my recovery work and working with amazing people like yourself going on their recovery journey. It's interesting what you said. You said sad circumstances, which is often how people interpret these kind of crux moments of their lives, but they really are like a springboard, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like all the amazing journey you've been on. I mean, you've been on an amazing journey for a very long time, but it really feels that after your rehab moment, things have really catapulted for
yeah.
you and your trajectory has gone even up. So that's why I find it such an exciting time. And often people are, they feel they're at rock bottom and things can't get any worse. And then I'm in a group going, this is really exciting. This is now the moment where you turn the corner and everything happens. And often people look back like really confused, but actually you were one of the few clients I've worked with over the years that you were just like right with me from the start.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. You just kept agreeing with things I was saying. So I loved having you in the group. That was great.
I really resonated with you because of your own story and the way you delivered your classes. It came from a place of heart and compassion, but also humor. But your knowledge is insane on what you knew about everything. And so how did you get that knowledge?
Wow. Well, that's really super nice of you to say. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been on my own journey with alcohol and other things over the years. I mean, I was a chronic alcoholic in the end. You know, that there's sort of, you know, medium, low level and severe. I definitely was a severe chronic type of alcoholism, but it took me like 15 years to get there. And essentially I was just a weekend drinker. I was really, really focused on my career in my 20s. I had a relatively successful career. I was doing BBC work. I was in the West End and I was really aware of this power that alcohol had over me very, very early on. So I ring fenced it into the weekends. I was only a weekend drinker. And then it was kind of that classic thing of, you know, now it's Thirsty Thursdays and now it's Happy Hump Wednesday.
Yeah, I resonate with that.
And Monday, well, I'm really depressed. You know, why am I depressed? Well, it's got nothing to do with the booze and the other stuff I've been up to. Do you know what I mean? So let's have another drink. And before you know it, you're sort of drinking every night, but functioning during the day. So that's not alcoholism. That's not addiction. So I'm telling myself. And then, unfortunately, the morning drinking came in. I always like, you know, that first drink on a Sunday, that hair of the dog that I had. It took me another decade to get there. But that I was teaching my brain at that moment that I could now cure the hangover with a drink. And then one day on a Monday morning, I'm having a drink. And then before you know it, I'm not functioning and I'm essentially non-functioning. And the only thing I could do at the end really was get to the off license and get back home and drink and pass out. So it was really chronic and severe. I mean, I was having alcohol physical withdrawal within half an hour of stopping.
Wow, okay.
Like physically shaking and like seeing things and stuff like that.
And how many attempts did it take you to become sober?
So many. I was the relapse king. You know, something that I talk about.
I was too.
Well, you know, I think there's a difference.
I went twice to rehab, guys, by the way. I did go twice.
It was nice to see you again. That's one way to do it. You know what I mean? But you know, actually, it's an interesting thing. I always say to people when they relapse and if they come back, you know, really nice to see you. And most people are like, are you taking the piss? Like, I'm back in rehab. But like, it can kill people, yeah. A relapse. So when I see people back from a relapse, it's like, this is now an amazing opportunity because you've now got amazing data on yes. what not to do. Because relapse is part of people's journeys. It's not part of recovery.
I don't even like the name relapse. I don't like the term relapse because it's like you've done something really wrong. It's actually an experience that you have learned to then come forth from. Just with my background, for those that don't know, I would be drinking on the weekends. Again, it would be binge drinking. I could never stop at one or two. I would be like, right, it's party time, tequilas, and I wouldn't know when to stop. I didn't realise it was such an escapism for me. Until the cocaine got involved, and I'd be up for like a day, 2 days, and I wouldn't want it to end. And it'd be like the next morning and I'd still be drinking to try and counteract the cocaine so I could sleep. And it was fucking disgusting. Like the come down from that, oh my God, it's like another planet of come downs. And I couldn't live like that. And I couldn't understand why my brain kept going for that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even like alcohol like that. It was an escape from everything I was holding within my body. Now the data of the DNA that would collect, or that I've collected, not just from this lifetime, many others, but the trauma that I'd endured, and I hadn't addressed any of that. And what rehab taught me was to go within and really look at the core root of why I was drinking. And it's easy to say this to people because alcohol is so easy to get. And so when I went to rehab, I went there, did my thing, and then it was a really hard time. It was around Christmas, and it was disgusting for me. I was alone, and then I just thought, oh, I'll have another drink, and it was fine, but I hadn't conquered the pain within me. So that one or two drinks turned into another session, and then I took myself back into rehab, and that's where my life changed. I had the awakening, but it wasn't just that. I was forced to look within. Now, I'm just going to fast forward it quickly because I could be around people that drink, and I could still have one or two, but my brain doesn't want to go any further. In fact, I'm now in a position where I have master power over it, which I've never had and I thought was impossible because they say, you know, stay sober for the rest of your life. And I hosted my first wellness retreat, the Rise Up, the other weekend, and everyone was like, let's go celebrate after. My PA's looking at me. And they were like wanting to go out and drink. And I had such a high from the healing and fulfilling my purpose. I was like, oh, nothing can beat that. No, I'm all right, thanks. Went, got my pajamas on, went straight to bed. Old Marlon would have been like, yeah, let's celebrate. But I consciously made a choice not to. Yeah. And it wasn't from a place of fear or fearing what alcohol would do. It's because, no, I don't actually want it. I don't want that. I don't want to feel like shit the next morning. I'm loving my brain being so conscious, so aware, and feeling high off life. Do you think that's where you've got to?
100%. I mean, you know, if you sort of look at the 12-step model, which I'm not here to kind of promote.
It's amazing, the 12-step.
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, it's all about finding a power greater. You get that power of choice back. You know, I know if you put a beer in front of me now, there's absolutely no way I'm going to drink it. And it's not because I'm cocky.
Would you like, fight that though? Are you fighting the feeling?
No, it's like you putting a horse shit sandwich in front of me and me turning it down and you saying, well, how did you do that? You know, because I don't want it.
Exactly, yeah, okay, amazing.
So that power of choice comes back. And something.
But how long does it take for the power of choice? Because with me, it was a bit different. I was like forced into a go inside yourself, Marlon, and deal with your demons. Not everyone has that. So they have that phase of really fighting to stay sober, and that's where everyone relapses, right? A lot of people do, and they're like fighting their around drink or that they, you know, to abstain from it. It's really hard.
Yeah, well, like you say, it is a process. I mean, I think it starts with sort of recognizing that, you know, for want of a better term, that you are powerless over it. I mean, often my story that I shared briefly at the beginning actually puts people off recovery, because what happens is I share my story and people are in a rehab and they're like, well, I'm not as bad as this guy, so I'm going to crack on. But what you noticed very early on is that when you have one, you're not quite sure if you're going to stop at one. And I think that's what addiction is, personally. I think it's the inability to be able to be sure to stop at one. I've got friends who are heavy drinkers. I could go into a pub with them and I could say, just have one beer. They might not like it. They might be like, oh, I want a few. But if they need to, if I said, I need you to stop at one, like, I can do it. Whereas with me, it might be one, it might be 10. I might drink for 3 hours, like I've just told you I'm going to. It might be 3 days. I might be in a great mood when I do it and have fun, or I might be in a terrible
rolling
mood.
Rolling the dice. I remember that.
My behaviour could be great. I could act like James Bond. I could be quite fun, or I could be a nightmare. And the bit that broke me was, in the morning, my mental health might be all right, or it might be completely shredded to bits. So I think it's noticing that, and then, like you say, being willing to go on a journey within. What is it? Geba Mate talks about this. He talks about...
I love him.
Amazing, right? You need to get him on. He says, don't ask why the addiction, why the pain? You know, which I think is a really powerful question, a very compassionate question. And I think if you're able to go on an investigative journey, then you do get that power greater.
Absolutely.
But some people want to leave rehab and do this thing on willpower alone.
Yeah, that was me the first time around. I was like, I can do this, I'm fine now.
Yeah, because addiction loves to play with our egos.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It will say, Marlon, you're a piece of shit and you don't deserve recovery. But also, you're Billy Big Bollocks and you can do anything.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is it's just pulling your trousers down and waiting for you to walk in the shopping centre.
Yeah.
If you're like, about to be embarrassed any minute.
100%. I think I was fighting this mask that I would be Marlon to everyone else online, but no one knew what I was battling deep down. Yeah. And I think the severity of it for this long, like I had held everything in and had this mask on. And when we keep on wearing masks, in the end, that mask has got to come off to be our true self. And I think that was the most difficult thing for me, just surrender to what was happening with me. If we go deeper now, this is going to get a bit deep.
Love it.
Do you think, right, because I know the answer to this, well, I know my answer to this. There is alcohol fucking everywhere. It's on every street corner, pubs everywhere. We are set up for fail as a society because England have just got clubs, bars, like every country.
Yeah.
It's almost like they know what it's going to do to us. It's legal, right? We're not taught about any of the tools we need to learn in school. So what I learned in rehab, I probably learned more of that than my whole educational system.
Wow.
We're taught the fundamentals of like English, math, science and business and other bits like that. And but the deep stuff of emotional regulation, nervous system regulation, like the damaging effects of like substances, what we eat, what we put in our body. Do you think that there's a role, how do I word it? There's more to play in this than just ourselves. Because you put someone vulnerable, suffering a trauma in a pub, they're going to go drink. You put someone that's done the inner work, that's really stands in their power, they're not going to drink. So you know what I mean? There's temptation everywhere. And I think that we could do more, not us, but the government and other places.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. I mean, I'm just starting to kind of collaborate with Alcohol Change UK, which is great. Which is, you know, they're not anti-alcohol per se, but they are anti-alcohol harm. And the thing is, yeah, you're right. Our society is so wrapped up in the alcohol culture.
Birthday, funerals, weddings, everything.
Absolutely. I mean, it's 1 in 8 people will get addicted to alcohol. You know, so take away trauma, take away PTSD, take away sexual abuse, take away mental health, depression. Whatever it is, 1 in 8 people who have none of those things will get addicted to alcohol because it is an addictive substance. It's the only drug, along with benzos, that will kill you in withdrawal. So heroin will, you know, you could die of something secondary like vomiting or diarrhea, but alcohol withdrawal can kill you. So, you know, it is a really, really dangerous drug. It's
legal. You
get
it for £2 a bottle as well.
Get it for £2 a bottle. And so, you know, any kind of scientist or expert will say that if it was a new drug on the market, it would be class A. Now, having said all of that, I'm not anti-alcohol. People can do what they want. But it is a very, very addictive substance, and a lot of people will get addicted to it. And it causes more societal harm in some studies than heroin and crack. So, you know, I think what you're talking about is important.
Yeah.
And I think the younger generation are cottoning on.
They are. A load of them are sober, and they're like vegan, and they don't drink.
Sober curious.
I know. It's just us. It's like our era, man. Because...
yeah.
I just remember growing up and like stealing my sister's ID and going out was just so normal and fun, and it was so fun to party.
Yeah.
But then the fun stops.
Yeah.
And your brain is wired to think to have fun, you need to drink. And by then you're fucked because then you add in the trauma and the other things. And it's just a whole concoction of disaster. One thing I noticed when I stopped drinking was how much alcohol can affect our consciousness and our ability to connect with source in meditation. And the ability to have clarity and function. And what I did, I remember I had like 1 or 2 drinks a few months ago. And I was like, oh, didn't like the way that my mind was starting to go. And I brought it back. And that's how I knew. I was like, I love to be really present and mindful in the moment. And what happened the next day was that voice in my head was extremely louder. You know the ego. The voice that tells you you need to be doing this when you're fearing this. And one thing that I remember from that was, wow, we have a choice to do certain things, right? And I had the I had a choice to have those two drinks. And what the outcome was that voice in my head, which I hate, that I managed to get rid of with a lot of meditation and work, came back. And I was like, a lot of people live like that. And there's a lot of things that affect having that voice, that critical voice, that inner parent, you know, that voice that constantly goes off and off and off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I worked so well to quieten that, to get it to almost zero, where I actually started to panic because I was like, oh, fuck it, I don't fear anything. I'm just living really in flow state and I'm loving life. And it came back and I wasn't used to it. And I was like, shit, I lived like this for so long. But that on steroids, right? It would have been like, Marlene, you're not good enough. Look in the mirror. What are you going to do tomorrow? Oh my God, you haven't done this yet. Oh, what if you don't have this coming in next week? And I found it came back and I was like, okay, this is interesting. Alcohol does that to you as well. The ego loudens and it cripples you in fear. And so I meditated the next day and I brought myself back down. And that was just like one or two drinks, right? God, imagine how big that voice would have been after a session. It would have been like, you fucking wanker.
Yeah. You'd have been lost. You'd have been like, oh, I can't even do this life anymore.
And so I meditated, went back to like my normal routine, and I'm there connecting and I'm getting these downloads and these visions and these premonitions, and I'm just, my life is in clarity and I'm just flowing and everything's so easy and that fear isn't there. And I thought to myself, I wish people could feel that state of mind. Mm-hmm. And you can get there. What are your thoughts on how alcohol and just the peace of mind, the brain, that voice?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was drinking. I was trying to get peace of mind.
Interesting. Not
realizing that it was contributing. I mean, the classic example of addiction is continuing doing something despite negative consequences. And then people kind of break it down into kind of like, you know, the physical addiction. You can kind of treat that fairly simply, often with medication. Obviously, we do a lot of work in rehab, mainly around the kind of mental side of it and the kind of neuroscience. But the area that's not talked about a lot, and sometimes I deliberately skip it because I don't want to alienate people too much.
Yeah.
Beginning of the journey, is that spiritual side.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a word that would have scared me a decade ago when I started to get sober, because I was an atheist. I was quite angry at the concept of God. And so I really, really struggled with the word spirituality as a concept, actually. And then I started to realize, well, actually, you know, love, compassion, these are spiritual concepts. Like, if you've got a dog and I've got a dog, I think I mentioned this to you before, like, there's no loveometer. You can't touch it or see it, but we know it's there. And so that kind of like opened the door for me. And if you think about it, addiction really is about isolation. It's about, I heard on a podcast recently that if you're bad in society, you get put in prison. And if you're bad in prison, you get put in isolation. And that's where addiction took me. You know, I wanted to drink on my own in the dark. That was my favorite drink. In fact, it started off in the VIP lounge, but it definitely ended up me in my flat on my own, you know, suicidal as well. And so recovery shows up, and the first word of step one is we. It's about connecting again straight away. My wife's South African. There's a lovely, I want to get this right because it's such a beautiful expression. It's called Ubuntu, which is a Zulu tribe expression, which means I am because we are.
That is beautiful. My heart just, I felt that.
Yeah.
I am because we are.
Yeah. And so recovery shows up and says, actually, you need to reconnect again. And that's the start of the spiritual journey, I think, because we live in, I don't want to go on a sort of a rant here, but we live in quite an individualistic society.
Separation everywhere.
Right?
Yeah, everything separated.
Preservation of self. Whereas in certain cultures, it's about the community. And I think it just feeds into this disconnection. A lot of people feel they're just placed on this planet. That, like, why am I born? What, quite angry.
That's the root chakra. The lack of purpose, the feeling of not being here for any reason and disconnection from oneself.
Yeah.
And you don't feel like your feet are truly on the ground.
Yeah.
And alcohol really disturbs the root chakra. It keeps people living below the bottom too. You can't get past, you know, the others. And especially on the road to opening up your pineal gland. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
But come on, carry on. As you said, yeah.
Well, I mean, I had a friend recently that's been suffering with alcoholism, and it sort of came out of the blue, and his wife rang me up and I said, oh, you know, what are you noticing? And we talked about consumption. She went, no, it's not that. It's his mindset. He's in a room and he's complaining, he's grumbling, and he's normally a very positive person, usually, you know, quite connected and open. And he's just, and that's what alcohol does to a lot of people. It makes people feel angry with the world, disconnected. It can give you a victim mindset. Everything's not right. And of course, you need more alcohol to kind of fix that. And so it just, you know, you get more and more and more and more disconnected. Have you ever heard of this experiment called Rat Park?
No.
So it's done in the 70s, and essentially what they did is they took a load of rats and put them in cages on their own. And they had two choices of two water bottles. One was laced with drugs and the other one with water. And the rats that were on their own, they basically just kept drinking the drug-laced water until they overdosed and died, basically. Bit cruel, so sorry if there's any animal lovers out there, myself included. Sorry about that. Then what they did, this was the 70s, then what they did is they created Rat Park, which essentially was sort of like, you know, heaven for rats, basically.
Still I want that. Marlin Park.
Yeah. So essentially there was loads of other rats. There was toys. They could get jiggy with it. There was partners there. There was like little play areas. Basically a really healthy, thriving rat community. Again, two bottles of water on offer, one laced with drugs, one with water. None of them went for the drug-laced water. In fact, they rejected it almost completely. Which really proves that a big part of addiction is about a disconnection to yourself and connection to the world around you.
And a connection with your younger self, your inner child inside of you. And what you just said, they had things to play, right? Everything was fun. They had the rat park.
I try
and make the Marlin Park every day.
Yeah.
I try and ignite that inner child in me, whether it's playing on Neopets online or playing on The Sims or drawing and painting and just using my daughter to connect with that part of me, because we become disconnected from ourselves because we forget how to have fun. We are just made to believe that we have to work, where we are then suffering inside ourselves because then we get tired, our nervous system is just like fucked. You know, we're eating shit food because it's a quick, easy option. We're drinking because we want to escape. We're like 1 o'clock in the evening. You know, a lot of mums do that. That was me. Oh, Zaya's so hard. I need to go and have wine when she goes to sleep.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes dangerous because you're so far gone. How do you get back? Does it take a rock bottom, do you think, majority, to get back to yourself? Because it did for me. Because I don't like to listen.
I think for most people, I think for most people with an addiction issue, yes, it often does take a rock bottom moment, but again, rock bottom can mean different things.
Be
emotional rock bottoms. I got a friend in recovery, her rock bottom was she got drunk one afternoon, she'd never done this before, 5:30, knock on the door, it's the headmistress of the school, you forgot to pick your child up. That's her rock bottom. She never drunk again.
But I feel that. I can understand that. There were times where Jared would have to have Zaya because I was in no state to look after her, and he helped me with that. You know, and that for me was like fucking hell. My daughter was my like catalyst to the growth and the determination to change.
Yeah,
she was put here in this world to force me to look within.
Yes,
like when there's something so precious involved like that. And don't get me wrong, I wouldn't drink to get pissed ever around her. I'd always wait because I would feel that loneliness whenever she was gone, and we were co-parenting. It was a really unhealthy co-parent relationship. He'd have her. And I'd just be sat here on my own, and I fucking hated it. So I wanted to escape that loneliness.
Mm.
But of course, the Monday comes, I've got her back, and I'm still tired and fucked from the weekend because alcohol drains you for weeks. It steals your future energy.
Yeah.
It steals a future version of you. I always say that. Mm. It like burrows the future Marlin.
100%.
Like you overcome, like you're giving more back than what, like, it's just nuts how it is. Yeah. And if you logically see it, why would you even pick up that few drinks when you know what it's going to do? But why don't we think like that at the time?
I don't know. I mean, for me, there's a lot of neuroscience about why that happens. But essentially, I look at it like a chronic learning disorder. And basically, the brain, that survival bit of the brain, I've taught it that I need it to survive, really, on some level. Because, you know, I had panic disorder and I remember drinking and it relieved my panic disorder for a moment. Or imagine if you've got even low-level depression, you do a line of cocaine and for a minute it goes away. The brain learns in that moment that this fixes that problem. And once that's in the synapses of the brain, it's quite hard to dislodge it. And so you keep going it. But even kind of like low-level stuff that isn't kind of like panic attacks or depression, like I'm sure if I said to you any emotion, like I'll throw them out to you now, like did you use drugs or alcohol, right? So boredom.
Boredom.
Happiness.
Yep.
Worry.
Yep.
Stress.
Yep.
Okay, I'll give you weather states. Sunny outside.
Oh, yeah.
Raining outside.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'll give you activities. Train journey.
Yeah.
Flying.
Yeah.
On a beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see what I mean?
Why? Why?
It's like, it's a constant.
You associate it with every fucking thing. Yeah. Like, I'm going away. with Zaya tomorrow, and I'm working with a company, and they booked, and they were like, oh, we've got all inclusive, you need to, you got £200 worth of alcohol. Then I was like, oh no, I'm not drinking, couldn't think of anything worse. I'm gonna cherish that every moment with Zaya and have memories. I can if I want to, but I know I'm not gonna. I'm not there to do that anymore. Whereas old Marla would have been like, oh yeah, holiday, let's get drunk, you know, beach vibes, have a cocktail while Zaya's playing.
Yeah.
No. I want my brain to be fully here with me.
100%. I've gone on holidays before that I couldn't remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know same. I mean? Oh, my God. Like... My 30th was just like...
Oh, so was mine.
I was in Ibiza. Disgusting. Right. Terrible.
I was in Dublin. I turned around to a friend and I was holding a drink. And I turned to him and I went, how am I holding this glass? And he went, why? Because I actually couldn't work out how I was
what the fuck?
I was so, like, disassociative with my body. I was like, so I was panicking going, how am I holding this glass? I don't understand how I'm doing it. I was like, oh, God.
But do you know what I really find upsetting about how I was like? It was like I couldn't have a few drinks because I'd be scanning the room to see who would be selling Coke. Yeah. Oh, he looks like he'd have Coke in his pocket. Oh, let me ask him. Yeah. Like, because I thought I needed it to continue. I didn't want it to end. But then I also understood through my healing that because I was raped when I was drunk and I had alcohol in my system, I thought that was my fault and I didn't ever want to feel that drunk feeling or blackout feeling again. So I would use Coke to try and sober me up. And that was a part of it too. Yeah.
And it binds and it makes a new drug, doesn't it? Cocaine, which is more toxic than alcohol and more toxic than cocaine. It bonds together. And obviously, yeah, like you say, you just...
What happens if you add diazepam into the mix after...
Well, I don't know.
What's that called?
I don't know. I've probably tried that as well. I mean, yeah, you know, it's amazing probably that we're both still alive. So
I know. And I did my glycan age testing last week. Have you heard of that? It's like they're testing for your actual biological age.
Oh, wow.
Right? I did that.
What'd you get? What'd you come back with?
20 fucking 1 years old.
Come on!
No, I know. And I'm 32 in like in a week's time.
That's amazing.
And so I have managed to reverse a lot through my emotional state. It's not even my diet. It's not changed that much. Like, I still love my chocolate and whatnot, you know. But by cutting out the alcohol, put that to a side as well. That's obviously the key thing, to have the state of mind. Mm. The emotional state and the healing and the work of calming your mind through meditation and letting things out. That has reversed my freaking age. Do you know?
You know what? We all know, particularly those in the recovery community or anyone who's having an addiction issue, that addiction is pernicious and it is awful and it is just so the dark night of the soul you've talked about on your podcast. But recovery is 10 times more powerful than that. So if anyone is listening to this who's touched addiction or is living it now, you're going to know how powerful it is. Recovery kicks its ass.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I wouldn't have had my Kundalini awakening if I didn't have that sober. So 100%. That gap of being sober.
Yeah, 100%.
There was no chance. My body was in any state to allow that to come through to me. And then my life changed and I saw things for what they were. But I needed clarity, and I think people are so busy they don't give themselves space, right?
Yeah.
Like they don't give themselves time to meditate or to sit or to just be. Yeah. We're on our phones, we're doing something, we're going to be somewhere or have a drink. Our mind is never just to just be. And rehab taught me that, the power of meditation to just be still. I didn't have my daughter there. I was alone for 3 weeks. Never in my life had I had that. I was running and escaping. My whole life I've been running from myself.
This is why rehab is such a powerful thing, because I think it's Carl Jung.
Otherwise, it's so expensive.
Oh, well, I don't get involved with the cost side.
But it is sad though, isn't it? People can't afford things like that. And I was so lucky, you know. Yeah. I was so lucky to be in a position where I had help and I could you know pay for it. But we're talking thousands here. Well, what is there to offer, Ollie, for people that are struggling?
Well, it is tricky if you know, there is a long waiting list. I mean, 10 years ago when I was first in recovery, you know, the NHS, the turnaround could be as quick as 2-3 weeks and you'd be in a rehab. So there was a place called Long Yard, which is in Russell Square, which is no longer there. I was in there within 3 weeks. It was free. I had a 10-day detox. Unfortunately, I came out and I relapsed. That, you know, the waiting list now is getting longer, longer and longer. I still volunteer within the NHS services and sometimes work. I was running a drop-in a few years ago and a guy came in, he had a can of beer. He came in with a nurse and with every sip, he's going, ow. And I said, you're all right. And that's my pancreas. And I was like, this is crazy. And he's like, 3 more months and I'll be in Bournemouth. And you think, this poor guy, he's literally just clinging on for dear life, still medically having to drink because of the seizure risk. And waiting, so it's really, really difficult, especially if you need that medical assistance. Yeah. But obviously there is a lot of self-help groups around AA, Smart Recovery, NA, CA. There's, you know, there are things out there. I would say go to your local drug and alcohol service and, you know, put your postcode in, and hopefully you've got a service that is running well, and you can get some help.
Because I'm just, this has triggered a memory in me. I'm an extreme person, right? Like,
me too.
My soul does things really extremely, like cut all your fucking hair off and shave the sides of your twat.
Suits you though. Looks great. Looks really good.
And when I rewind, I was in such a fortunate position. I'm going to use this time actually to give Zaya's dad, Jared, so much gratitude. He actually helped pay towards rehab, and he just made sure he had Zaya. He looked after Zaya so well. And then he had to have her again, and he did that. And I gave up my whole life. He gave up part of his, and I was able to go. Now, not everyone has that, and that's where my heart empathizes with single mums or mums or anyone that hasn't got the money to or the support around them. But I didn't have the support around me, which is why I was doing what I was doing. I had really shit friends and shit people around me, and I was just suffering. But I think there needs to be something. I really do wish there is something that I can create one day, like a foundation where there's just accessible information. Come on, Ollie, let's create something.
Yeah, we can. I mean, I'd be really, really up for it. Yeah, I mean, I think the prices for rehab, obviously, it puts probably 98% or 99% of the population probably can't have access to it.
Yeah.
Globally, that is definitely a fact. Within the UK, I don't know what it is. But I often say that to people in rehab. I'm like, you know, you should be grateful just for the fact that you're in this.
Yeah, there were people in there when I was in there that had gone there 20 times.
Yeah, and you're like, wow.
That's 20 times what? It's
like, yeah.
200 grand or more or what?
Sometimes working with a client in the NHS who's only got one shot at it is easier than someone at a very, you know, high-end clinic, you know, who's going round and round the roundabout, who's got billions of dollars, because that person is always thinking in the back of their head, well, I've got the cash to pay for it. So money can sometimes not be the answer that we think it is, because sometimes it gives people who are very, very rich this idea that they can just keep coming
back. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a weird thing.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that not more funds needed, but, you know, that can be an interesting thing as well.
With me, when I'd drink and I'd go out partying, I would use it as a confidence boost, obviously. And it gave me my voice almost. And when I'm in that state of being drunk, I'm feeling validated. And I feel empowered. But it was so false, because when I stripped all of that away and I went sober, I had to do it properly and find my throat and open up all these blockages within me. So yeah, what could you say about that? Validation addiction.
Well, it's quite interesting because, you know, you asked me right at the beginning, what was it like when I first came into rehab? And, you know, I've met you up today. We've met up a couple of times since you've left. You're on my podcast, episode 25.
Yes.
School of Rock Bottom. And it was amazing how well you were doing then. But I think when you were in rehab, that I sort of got the sense, which is completely normal in rehab, that you were like, again, what mask do I put on?
Yeah.
Not feeling quite, I'm probably being overly kind there, but just not feeling fully comfortable in your own skin. And then today it's like night and day. You know, I'm coming in, there's just such a lovely at peace aura. You're very much in your confident in your own self. But I think the issue that you talked about going back within, What my recovery allowed me to do is to go, okay, well, what is this about? Because I used to have such a sort of addiction to validation, you know, whether it be through even social media likes, but particularly through my acting career. And that sort of led me on a journey back into, I guess childhood, because, the one thing that would always get me validation as a kid was my sort of drama achievements, you know, getting a lead role in a play, or I used to do exams, or I got into National Youth Theatre and I got into drama school. And I sort of learned this behaviour very early on that I was good enough if I was good at drama. Now, obviously, I wasn't saying words like that as a teenager, you know, but that gets locked somewhere in your subconscious. So then as an adult, being an actor in this industry, all my sense of self went on that. And I think a lot of people do that. You know, it won't be acting, but it will be something else. So it meant everything, you know. And if I didn't get that validation, whether it be through people watching me in a play going, oh, wasn't that great? Or well done you got this part in a TV series. I actually didn't know who I was. Like, all my validation had to come from you or whoever it was. And recovery's really taught me something very, very simple. Like, why does anybody else's opinion of me matter than my own?
It's so interesting you said that, because I went to an event last night.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my friend that went with me, that after Love Island, I would go to any old fucking event to be seen. And I'd be drinking, firstly. And I'd be like trying to make myself be seen and talk to people I didn't want to talk to. And if my patrons didn't make the Daily Mail, I'd be like, oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, I need them. And I would feel validated when they were on there. And it was so sad. And then I went to an event and last night, and it was one that aligned with me, Deepak Chopra's event. And it was all on consciousness. And they were like coming up to me like, wow, thank you for everything you're doing. And I was so humble. I was like, oh my God, no, thank you for having me. The role's reversed. But in fact, I'm attracting more abundance through being my authentic self and not needing the validation or looking for it. It just automatically flows to me now.
Yeah,
whereas I was working so hard to be seen. And the more I did that, the more I was unseen. Mm. And that little girl inside of me was just crying inside. And now that little girl is content, I'm just like, I'm just happy. Just cool being cool.
Well, you're right. You know it's the inner child, isn't it? It's something, there's some want or need that wasn't met. And, you know, addiction is all about, you know, we've talked about this before, is about get something outside of yourself to fix that hole. And that never works.
Whether it's
food, alcohol,
shopping.
You know, it's that same old story. And then what you're left with, you're left with yourself. And then you realise, actually, all the wealth is within me.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not really Marlin.
No.
You're not really...
Dust.
Yeah, you know, we could go there, couldn't we? You are the universe in manifestation. You are the Big Bang.
I'm a projector of you. You're looking at me right now as I'm talking. You're just projecting.
We're just playing. We're just playing.
I'm mirroring
you.
It is.
We're just playing a game.
Simulation.
Well, now we can really get to it.
I know.
I mean, my favorite quote is, I think, from Carl Jung, which basically says, you know, there's no coming to consciousness without pain.
Absolutely.
And consciousness doesn't come from imagining beams of light. It's about making the darkness conscious. So, you know, and you're proof of that. You know, you did a brave thing. You went into rehab twice. You really worked inward. And now look at the benefits that you're getting.
I know.
You know, it's incredible.
And I just want anyone listening to know that you can get to this place.
Yeah.
It's for anyone. We have the power within ourselves to determine the outcome of our reality. We always do. Like your story, Ollie, and then now you're sat here with me and we're talking. And who would have thought when I was in rehab talking to you? Or who'd have thought when you were on your rock bottom, like a decade ago?
Yep.
Like, we don't know what the future holds, so we can only control the present moment. And that's all we have. And all we have is now, as cheesy as it sounds. And something that I got told yesterday was, to be present, all you're going to do is stop to see who's listening.
Absolutely.
Because when you do that, you're actually present. Do you get it? Stop. Who's listening? Only then you become present when you stop to see who's listening. No one's here.
If you talk all the time,
yeah,
which is what I've done a lot of on this podcast. Sorry, but all you can talk about is your own things you've said. And similarly, if you think all the time, all you can think about is your own thoughts.
Yeah.
So you're going to drive yourself nuts.
Yeah.
Magic's in the silence.
So Ollie, we're going to wrap this up. But if there's one thing you could, one bit of advice you could give to anyone listening to this that's on their journey, I don't know what part of the journey they might be on, but anything you can take from your own path. What would you say?
I would say, if it's addiction specifically, stop comparing yourself to other people. Stop asking people how much they drink, when they drink, how many units, how many days of the week, because all that is a projection away from your truth. You've got to boil it right back to, is this thing, whether it's drugs, alcohol, or maybe other behaviours, are you continuing it despite negative consequences? And can you be sure you can stop at one? If the answer is you can't be sure, then you are powerless over it and you have a problem. Like, you are not responsible for your addiction, but you are responsible for your recovery. We have to take ownership of this thing, because addiction has consequences, not just for ourselves, but for everyone around us. So we have a duty. Once you realize, yes, this could be addiction, we have a duty of care to ourselves and those around us to do something about it. I'm very passionate about that. And getting autonomy. You know, I'm not going to blame anyone or anything that this has happened. It's happened. And now I'm going to take ownership of it and move forward.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. You're a legend, Ollie.
You a legend.
Thank you so much. And where can people find you?
My podcast, School of Rock Bottom, is on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, everywhere else. And hopefully there'll be some links in the show notes.
Yeah.
Maybe with some links.
And your
stuff.
Instagram, what's your Insta?
@ Oliver Mason 1.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Marlin.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Pleasure.